Welcome to the Herbal Womb Wisdom Podcast, where we explore the embodied practice of herbalism with the womb at the center for folks who are new to herbs or herbalists in the making. This is a place to become empowered to include herbs and natural therapies in your personal health and, most importantly, to reconnect to the deep wisdom and healing capacity of your own body and the earth. I'm your host, clinical herbalist and integrative health educator, Kyalea Honeybee. Let's dive in. Hi, beautiful friends. Welcome. Welcome back if you're returning, and welcome, welcome if you're new. Woo! It has really started to be signs of spring here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine. I know last week I mentioned some of the birds I saw outside, but wow, there's the forsythia is blooming now. Tons of plants are starting to come back. Lots and lots of perennial herbs are showing their faces. I got to see multiple different flowering plants when I went over to a local nature center that has a lot more early spring flowering plants. I've seen some trillium coming up. I haven't seen the flowers yet, but I've seen some trillium coming up in our forest. I've seen some trout lily, also not flowering yet, maybe today, but when I was there a couple of days ago, not quite yet. So we are in that spring ephemeral season here in the Wabanaki lands of Maine. I know if you are more south on the East Coast, you've probably experienced that either a few weeks ago or even a couple of months ago, depending on where you are. And if you're in the West, probably similarly. We definitely have a long await to spring here, and it is just glorious when it happens. Like, there's birds all over the place. It's just very exciting. And perfect time, right? Because this week is Beltane week. This week is that week that is really celebrating that luscious fertility energy of the springtime, that time when we're really coming together in community to celebrate the fertile ground, the fertile possibility of the earth, and express that with each other, right? In a creative way. So I'll invite you to consider how you're celebrating that aspect of fertility, of possibility, of rebirth, of connection this week, if it feels like something that feels true for you to explore. Today's interview is with Dr. Sarah Wiley. She's a naturopathic doctor. She practices in Vermont, and she also is starting up a school and educational program that will invite people from all over to learn with her. I know that she has some online class offerings as well, mostly oriented towards tending the womb as kind of the center. She works with whole being, whole person health, but what she considers to be, in quotes, women's health. And of course, that relates to many systems of the body. But for her, this all started, like her interest in all of this started in the late 90s. So that's, well, 25, 26, 27 years ago, almost 30 years ago, when she had an abnormal pap that came back. She had cervical dysplasia, and she was seeking out all the different possibilities of what she might be able to do and support her body with, and was really looking for people who had knowledge and wisdom beyond just the surgical procedure she was being faced with. And so she actually found Rosita Arvigo at that time, who she went and studied with and really found inspiring. But then she got to a level in her training with her where she had to have some kind of license in order to continue training and doing the practitioner training. And so she was looking into different options, and she ended up finding naturopathic doctor school, essentially, like going to medical school in the naturopathic perspective. And that was just something that made sense to her. And so she did that training, and she studied even midwifery in that time. And so she really started orienting towards womb work, also from the lens of the childbearing years, and was attending births for a time. But now, like many, many years later, decades later, she has come to a place of where she integrates. She integrates the lab work and the intakes and the clinical kind of discussions and dialogue with embodied body work, womb-centered, pelvic floor-centered, belly-centered, abdominal, all different areas of the body work that she finds to be incredibly powerful, this kind of weaving of those modalities together has become so important for her. One of the things that I actually loved hearing in this interview was when she said that if she just talks to people, she feels like she gets about one third of the information that she needs to make the best recommendations, to actually know what's happening in the body. Because the truth is, and that would be true, right, for most of us, the truth is that the body holds so much that we might not consciously be aware of. And so she really speaks to a lot of this. We talk a lot about womb care, womb tending, how to know if you might be holding any trauma in your womb, what she does, what her practice is. She actually describes in a lot of detail her bodywork practice and how she kind of works to support people to release some of the story and the trauma held in the womb space. And so she has a particular way that she does this with bodywork. She gives a lot of detail about her process. And then she does a guided visualization. If you're somebody who enjoys guided visualizations, there's about, I think it's like an 8 to 10 minute guided visualization that helps move through the body, connect with the earth, connect with the sky, connect with the body, and really tune into your womb space. And it's a beautiful option of a way to connect in and to see if there's anything there for you to explore more. It's one of the many pathways to connect more with your womb space. So that is kind of smack dab in the middle of the interview. And then we talk a little bit about her perspectives on perimenopause and menopause, which are actually really interesting. She's in that time frame now of her life. And so she's reflecting on it a lot. And she's got a particular phrase that she used, which I'm not going to share now because I don't want to spoil it, but it is something that I really appreciated. I really appreciated that perspective. For us to actually feel the power and the potency and the beauty of our bodies as we move through the transition from fertility years, from cycling years into our menopausal years, which I know we talked about just a few weeks ago with Serafina Kapranos as well. But gosh, it's good stuff. It's good stuff for us all to be hearing. So before we dive in, let's do the disclaimer that nothing that we share today is medical advice, certainly not individually. I am an herbalist. I am a integrative health educator and integrative health coach. And Sarah is a naturopathic doctor, but neither of us are your personal practitioners. So everything is just for your own information, education, for your own personal empowerment, for you to feel into what feels true and right for you, because your own womb space and your own body always know best. And second disclaimer, there are some gendered pronouns used in this episode, words like women's health, words like feminine, words like female. You'll hear some of those in the episode, but this is absolutely relevant for you if you have a womb, if you're going through the womb cycles, if you're holding any kind of trauma in your pelvic area, in your abdomen. I think that you'll find some real gems in here. So with no further ado, here's the interview.
So looking forward to this conversation and just having you here. Thank you. Thank you for showing up. It's actually interesting. I think that it was one of my previous guests who had recommended that I connect with you like a year and a half ago.
Yes. Thank you so much, Kailea. I'm excited to be here in the womb space with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you really are. I'm excited to hear even about your background because I don't know a ton about it, but I know that your practice does or has focused on womb space and therapeutic work, both physically, right, with actual like massage and body work, and then also clinically in different ways, I think.
Yeah. So I'm a naturopath and I'm licensed in the state of Vermont. Focus on women's health. I like to think of it as holistic gynecology or quantum gynecology. I do sort of more conventional things with lab work and then, you know, your sort of typical intake, but then we always move to the table as, you know, as long as somebody wants to do that. And we do physical medicine and see what's in the body. So that can look like aligning organs or massaging organs that have like dropped or even lifted too much. Like the stomach can often get too high. The uterus can do lots of different amazing things. And then there's also, you know, fascia in the whole body. So we're doing myofascial techniques in the viscera to help improve organ function. Then there's also the muscles in the pelvic floor, and that gives me a different way of talking to the uterus because the cervix is there and that's the bottom of the uterus. And then, you know, that's more accurate for understanding position and really getting the real landscape of what's going on, while I encourage the person on the table to use their third eye to like look within and visualize what's happening. Mm. And we just look for stuck places and we hold them with curiosity and see what happens. It's every day is like a miracle when I go to work. I feel like I never know what's going to happen. I almost always feel better at the end of the day, unless I've done too many treatments, obviously, because it's just a very sacred space to share with people.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you for describing all of that. I feel like bridging the worlds of your background as your naturopathic doctor. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So you've got like that background and then bringing it into the body and then bringing it into the intuitive place. You're really providing such full being support.
Yeah. I always feel like if I just talk to people, I get about a third of the information I need.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then I can actually make more intuitive recommendations about different botanicals or supplements or next steps because I'm in communion with somebody's body. You know, it's a very good physical exam. And I don't like to send people off with too many homeworks. You know, we're all kind of overstimulated. So it's nice to be able to drop in and find like three or four things that I think would help them focus the best on their self-care. I had cervical dysplasia, which is a precursor to cervical cancer, mm-hmm. at the end of the 90s. And I was in Vermont and I, you know, went to Planned Parenthood and was given that diagnosis and was told I would need a procedure to slice the bottom of my cervix off. And the provider was really like slut shaming me and also gave me a very rigorous rectal exam. That was sort of my wake up to, It doesn't matter the gender of the person who's providing care, because a lot of it is misogynistic, you know, the training that's been going on. I also been molested by two doctors when I was a teenager. So all of this experience led me to want to find someone who could understand what was going on with the labs and was really grounded in the science, but then also was caring of me and had understanding of botanicals and other ways that we can stimulate the life healing force. That was when I made contact with Rosita Arvigo's training. I saw a flyer on the bookstore in Manchester in Vermont, and that's what led me to that next step. And I did all the training I could do without a license, but then I needed a license. So then I was really struggling over, I was really interested in midwifery, but I kind of had this feeling that would collide with when I wanted my own kids and family, and it would be really difficult to maintain being on call and that rigorous work of midwifery. So I was debating nursing school to become a nurse midwife or maybe even like a doctor of osteopathy. And then I found out about a naturopath. I'd never heard of that before. I was an AmeriCorps Vistas worker, and I was at a conference, and then I met someone who was planning to go that year to naturopathic school. And then when she went, I was able to go and visit her. So that's how that ended up. And so I went through naturopathic school knowing that I wanted to practice similar to Rosita Arvigo, my teacher. So I was able to focus on those things. I did births as well. So I've been going to births since 1998. And being able to apply this very holistic view of the uterus to women in labor or people giving birth was really profound. And doing these abdominal massages in pregnancy led to like this average of people giving birth in about 4 hours with less complications for the baby and the mother. And it was just super exciting because I was no longer feeling like, oh, you have to give birth at home to have an unobstructed birth. Because I feel like what happens in the hospital, there's so many obstructions to natural birth, like bright lights, people coming in, they look at the monitor, they're talking about their lunch they had in the cafeteria, or, you know, what kind of hemorrhage medicine to have. Those are all super distracting and can cause obstructions. Doing these treatments during pregnancy made the birth so profoundly unobstructed that it didn't really matter where they were giving birth. So that was super exciting. So a lot of my practice is around that. But of course, there's so much trauma that occurs just from being a human, being descended from generations of other humans who have lived through persecutions, rapes, you name it, you know, having children taken from them, all kinds of horrible things that happen. And then, of course, there's the environment that we're in right now with all the toxins. The uterus is a sentient organ that holds information until there is direction to release it. I'm really interested also in providing a set and setting for people to release what is stored in the womb so that they can release it, move it, and become lighter, more, you know, have less to carry. They still have the stories, but they're not as charged.
I really appreciate everything that you just shared. I loved that concept that you just said. The uterus is a sentient organ. I might misrepresent.
Yeah, you got it.
The sentient organ that holds energy, did you say, and that the energy needs to be released? Is that what you said?
Yeah, energy, I called it information, but it's the same. We hold information, energy from our ancestors, from the culture around us, from our experiences that we've had, and then our desires and the things that we long for. There's a lot that is held in this space between our hips and between the pubic bone and the sacrum.
Yes. And that's a powerful space. It's like the center of creation. And it's also the center of like holding, like you're saying, like all these stories and lineage, and it's just so much in there. I love that you're sharing about this. So is that your focus, is kind of working in the womb space when you're working with people?
I'd say that it is. You know, I have, my moon is in Gemini, but my sun is Capricorns and I'm Libra rising. So I have a lot of air in my system that likes to have lots of options. So I have lots of treatment options for people because everyone is different, obviously. But I have some people that are coming in, they're really just trying to get pregnant, and I meet with both partners and work with them that way. I have people who are already pregnant and I'm doing those treatments I was just alluding to. And that doesn't require like figuring it out. And we're actually really not trying to release too much trauma in like a deep, heavy way. It's more like a light combing of residual stuff that has maybe already been moved, maybe a little triggered again. We might be working with birth trauma from a previous birth, but that's usually just in the first treatment or so. Earlier in the pregnancy, the pregnancy treatments are less about trauma releasing and more about supporting. Typically, it just depends on what's going on. I meet with a lot of people after they've lost pregnancies. And obviously, that's a very specific kind of holding and releasing, usually focused on that particular experience. And then if they continue to see me, we might end up going to some previous traumas. And then I have a lot of people with older kids or people even in their 60s, 70s of age who want to lighten their load. They're specifically there to release trauma from their childhood, from their ancestors, from their births, divorces, their everything. The pregnancy piece may have some trauma release in it, but that might not be why they think they're there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times if that imprinting of trauma can obstruct pregnancy from growing. So we do the work, right? And then the baby is the bonus.
Yeah, it's interesting in the preconception period, whether it's working viscerally or therapeutically with massage, or when we think about like nourishing the body, preconception, that idea, it's similar where like it is ideal to sort of detox potentially like earlier in the preconception phase before you're starting to try to conceive. That is helpful. but yeah,
I highly recommend it.
Yeah.
And yeah. I wish I had done a bunch of lymphatic drainage for my breasts before I nursed a child. I remember feeling sad when I was nursing my first baby, like, oh, I wish I had done that, because, you know, I was 32. That's a lot of accumulated stress in the breast tissue. Mm. Anyway, we do the best we can. And so I'm just putting that little tip in there. If you're in a preconception phase, it would be great to see a great manual lymph drainage person for your breasts before you nurse your first baby. And, you know, explore what is in the womb. See if there's something that wants to go. Sometimes these energies need to stay. It, you know, it's a great mystery. I always ask, what is the highest priority need for clearing? Because I don't know when I'm working with someone. I just ask that the highest need for clearing come to the surface, and it usually does. Mm-hmm. So someone might remember, you know, an experience they had with a partner when they were very young, who was maybe coercing them into having intercourse that was unprotected, that led to pregnancy they had to then terminate. And then that energy ball will like rise up, and we'll feel it together, because I'm super empathic. My job is to keep somebody safe on the table and to root and ground myself into the heart of the earth, so that this energy, when it comes up, is purely just witnessed. We just hold it, and then it, as we pay attention to this, it starts to shift and change. If you could imagine like a ball of energy, and then it will expand and then dissipate. The female form is uniquely suited for releasing this kind of energy because we have a birth canal. So that is really good, easy imagery for releasing. I invite that energy to go to the center of the earth for transformation. That's just an example. And then, yeah, we just really want to hold the person who experienced that type of coercion or whatever. And there's often a lot of like shame and blame. And so we want to bring in the energy of forgiveness and grace to help eliminate the charge that happens when we experience this kind of thing.
Wow. That is so beautiful to hear that visual of that, where I can really feel and see how it can happen, how the energy can, and the information and that trauma piece can be released. And also just having the awareness that this is possible, that people who might be carrying certain stories or traumas or experiences or even tightness, I mean, they might not even be consciously aware of them, but they might be there, that this is something that can be released in this lifetime. Like, that in itself, I think, can bring so much possibility and hope for people to just even know.
Yeah, I think we can like think and understand ourselves and the stories that we've been through, but there's a part that's like in the body that needs attention. Typically, there is a great potential for traumas to be held in the intestines, in the abdomen as well. I just know we were talking specifically about the womb today, but I just wanted to mention that, like, you know, really anywhere in your body, but the organs tend to be a storage place for that kind of stress. The solar plexus being another big one. It's a kind of technology that, you know, I've learned through an American woman, through her Maya teacher. His lineage actually comes from Caribbean, which of course is a mixture of Native Americans, Caribbeans, and Africans. You know, it was a melting pot too. So these lineages come from all over the world. And it's a technology that our ancestors developed to release what is being held in the body, so that there's less likelihood for disease to take hold and disturb normal physiology. I think a question would be like, what are some symptoms? Like, how would I know I have trauma in my body? I would say the number one is pain. And, you know, you can have pain because you slipped on the ice and fell on your bottom for sure. And that would just be like pain from falling on the ice, not necessarily from a long time ago. But I'll tell you, if you do fall on the ice, you could injure your tailbone, but also your uterus might drop to the bottom of your pelvic bowl. To my mind, that would be like an emergency to come in and like come to the clinic and have your uterus lifted again through a series of treatments. But anyway, so back to how would you know? So there's a feeling of there's pain is one of them. We can also have dysfunctional bleeding patterns, like too heavy or too light. My definition of a normal menses would be like 3.5 to 4 days of moderate bleeding that has absolutely no pain. You can feel yourself bleeding and you can feel that your uterus is active, but not actually like cramping pain. If your menses is more like 7 days and you're in your teens, that's probably still normal. But ideally, blood loss isn't too much because you will lose your nutrients, and it isn't too little because it would be harder to nourish a pregnancy with. Sometimes people come to me and they've had their period for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's another sign to me of some kind of trauma, or the blood might be very like lifeless looking, meaning it's rusty, it's crusty, it's gloopy, sticky, dry. I like the menstrual cups because you can really see what your blood is and like how much you're bleeding. The only thing I would caution is like if you pull them off, you really want to break the seal so that you're not pulling your uterus down when you take them out. And of course, I like pads because they're cloth pads because they're better for the environment and they feel better to your skin. And I concerned about tampons and like long-term use maybe being implicated with endometriosis. This sort of lifeless sensation in the pelvis might be another one.
Can you speak a little more to what that would be? Lifeless sensation?
Yeah, it might be like cold or like really difficult to connect with or empty. Almost like there's maybe like a block in the abdomen that prevents sensing into the hips and pelvis area.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. There are a lot of people actually who feel really disconnected from their womb space. And it's like energetically, it's like not wanting to go in quotes down there. You know, even
calling it down there. Right. That feels like it's so far away. Like, right. What are we have like tin cans on a string to reach it. Like, yeah, no, it's like, we want to feel like one whole being.
Yeah. I know so many of us live in our brains or our heart spaces, you know, heart space up is like where a lot of people live.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those would be the main things, mm-hmm. you know, those would be the main things other than like, you know, occasionally someone comes to me and they have like a dream or, but usually people are coming to me because they have some kind of pain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So pain. And then I guess also like, so trauma being, there could be physical trauma. There's also emotional trauma that could be held there and it can show up as like physical symptoms.
Yeah. Right. Like a fibroid, for example.
Thank you for sharing all of that. I think it is important just to have awareness and to start to tune in. And I think even just that invitation of like, it's okay. And maybe it is helpful to like have someone the first time, if you are somebody who is less connected or feels even fear or just that lifelessness in that place, to actually go work with someone for the first time, I imagine that could be helpful.
Mm-hmm. I also think like activities like hula hooping can be helpful. You know, different yoga practices. There's lots of different activities that help us connect to the pelvis, but I also am a big fan of guided visualization. So we'll do an example of that while we're talking.
Yeah, I think guided visualization, you know, I also think of belly dancing as an as something
right
that's just like so oriented to that. It's actually something that I've offered as a possible activity for a couple of clients to help them get connected. And it's interesting how there's resistance there, like I've noticed. And it's not like I'm like not like, oh, everybody needs to belly dance. I don't actually feel right. like we need to go out and like be belly dancers performing. But it's like, what is the resistance? You know, like what is the resistance to actually just centering in that part of your body?
Well, it's probably feeling the intensity of the pain that's held there and not having the right support to go in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what are some ways that you support folks? Is it like how you were speaking? Is that the main way that you're helping people to process and move through and heal?
Yeah. I'd say it also, I realize it starts with my intake form. And, you know, I always feel like, oh God, someone could become really wealthy if they just made like an intake form chip or something that you could take to all your different providers. You wouldn't have to keep filling it out. But just by writing your history can be really helpful when you know someone's actually going to read it. Another thing is the ACEs score. Have you heard of the adverse childhood events scoring?
Mm-hmm.
So I offer that for people to answer. They don't have to. But I can't remember if it's 8 or 10 questions.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's 10. That's like a pretty quick way of determining how stable somebody's childhood was. You know, the studies with that show, you know, increase
everything. It's really, I know.
I've heard that.
I mean, it's like heart conditions, diabetes, obesity. And then it's, of course, you know, different conditions, endometriosis, like all of the stuff. It's like anything.
Mm-hmm. I like to look at that score versus like what people are coming to me with and sort of correlating those things. And even like almost like a personality test too. If someone's has a high ACEs score, but very few health conditions, I'm like thinking about, is it resilience or is it denial? You know, what?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious about it. I don't know the answers, but I started doing that during COVID. Okay. So I look at surgeries because, of course, like needing a surgery is pretty intense. So if you have surgeries, especially in the abdomen or pelvis, there's physical trauma there. Surgery is controlled chaos, controlled trauma. It leaves an imprint both physically with the scar. And I found the more people were like accepting of their surgery, the less the scar tissue is, unless you have certain gene type people who make keloids and stuff like that. That's genetic. But, and then I look at the different kinds of health conditions that people have. We talk about childbirth history, and sometimes it's themselves and sometimes it's to their children. I often ask, where did they grow up? I always ask, where do you live now? And then we, during the time that we're on the table, we might go into where did the ancestors live? Because we're Americans and most of us, our ancestors did not come from here very far back. There's a reason why we got here and who were the ancestors that moved here and under what conditions did they move or were they moved? What is the story prior to the moving? Is there any story that the person has, or is there some impressions that they have? You know, we're connected to the earth, obviously, like through the food that we eat, and the climate informs what, you know, how we dress and what we eat. And but then there's also that energetic connection that we have with the earth where we live. And Americans, I would say, at least people who don't come from this land for generations back, are newcomers, you know, and we're still developing the root. That comes up a lot in my practice. After we taught, you know, they've done the intake form, then we meet, we talk about it. If someone tells me they, you know, has listed their traumas, I don't necessarily talk about them with them. I just know it's in there so that when we are together on the table, if something really powerful comes up, I have an idea of what it is. And maybe we will talk about it, but I don't prefer to have people who just met me tell me about their trauma unless they want to, because that's potentially traumatic. So then we move to the table, and my table is heated and created like a sacred container. So they know that they get to direct the treatment. They can stop at any time. I'm going to be checking in with them because I know when I get body work, it's really hard for me to talk and advocate for myself even. I've had people like pull my arms way too much, but I was just in such a deep sort of trance state. It was hard for me to vocalize that. So I tell them I'm going to ask them a lot of questions and make sure that everything's okay. And we can always redirect. There's no need to perform as a good patient. A lot of people want to be a good girl or a good boy, you know, like they want to be compliant. They want to be like all those things. They want approval as like the receiver of care. And that's like that in itself is so much to hold. So I want to make sure that people feel like they know they can tell me, or even just like grimace or something, and where we will redirect so that it feels supportive. Yeah, I always start with people face down because I like to work on the sacrum first. Mm-hmm. And this sacrum is, you know, the great mother bone in my way of thinking. I feel like the ancestors are in there. Mm-hmm. And I like to connect with that. And so many times our sacrums are kind of fixed, probably because we sit in chairs and drive a lot, or there's fascial restrictions, or it's actually rotated, or someone injured themselves. Here's another fun fact. There's a growth plate in the sacrum that closes around age 21 or 25. And if you have a really intense injury, like falling on your bottom before that it seals, your sacrum will have a sharp angle coming inward. It's not that I can like realign that kind of issue because that's, you know, set in stone, so to speak, with the bone. But we can help the fascia around the bone and different structures, and all of the nerves that feed the uterus come through the sacrum. So it's a great connecting point. And that's how I prefer to start. Also, my hands are cold. It's much better to have cooler hands on your back than on your belly. At that point too, someone has gone into a deeper state of relaxation and some of their guards have come down because they actually can trust me and I can trust them. And it's we're building a relationship so that when they turn over and we start actually going into the deeper places, we have some basic structure or communication that we've put in place.
Mm-hmm. I actually started as a massage therapist like forever
ago. I noticed that because I've been listening to your podcast.
Yeah. And that's totally where my interest in bodies came from, really. Before that, mm-hmm. I was all like farming and being outside. So it's really interesting to just hear all of this and to feel some of the overlaps with even just working on the whole body and not focusing, you know, from my training and lens. And but I also wanted to say that just hearing you speak this, I'm like, oh my gosh, body work. Like I feel like it's the missing link, even in the work that I do, but just kind of like more of us need to have this kind of integrative care. Like this is real integrative care. You know what
this is integrative care. Definitely. It's like we're exploring psychedelics as a culture now for healing trauma. And, you know, that it's beginning to pop into the mainstream, but I'm really interested in the integration process that happens after mm-hmm. that. And I think body work is where it's at for mm-hmm. that. And it might be part of the preparation too, but I think just the coming into the body and doing like an internal scan and figuring out where places might be stuck or need attention, basically, super helpful. And there's so much emotion that's stored in the body that we can integrate and release through the body.
So good. But I'm just wondering if now we can kind of break from how you work with people and maybe just have you offer a simple guided practice that people might be able to try.
Yeah, I think that's perfect. Yeah, because similar to how I work, it's like we've talked and we've got a bunch of ideas, but now let's ground it in the body. So I encourage people to sit in a way where their chakras are stacked on top of each other, meaning like you're sitting comfortably, but with your vertebrae straight. So you're sitting up. I can do this lying down, but it's just a little easier when you're sitting up, if you can. Yeah, making your feet make contact with the floor, thinking about the room that you're in, and dropping into the space between the hip bones. Also thinking about your sacrum. Are you comfortable? Pubic bone in the front. And I like to start with dropping a grounding cord from the center of the pelvis. You could think of it as the birth canal. You could think of it as your tailbone, whatever is most comfortable for you, and dropping that down through the physical space, the house, into the crust of the earth and down into the deeper layers of the earth where it becomes really warm inside the earth. And just allowing some of that earth energy to permeate your lower body, like in a multidimensional grounding frequency, and allowing that heat from the earth to radiate and provide warmth for your pelvic bowl. And I'm going to begin with imagining that if you are facing south or you are thinking about the south, I'm actually going to bring you to where I am. So I am in the Champlain Valley, the Lake Champlain, and I'm facing south. We've got the Adirondacks to the right and the Green Mountains to the left. And I'm on the southeastern rim of that beautiful lake valley. So it's like the pelvic bowl of the earth. Obviously, there's many of them around the earth, but that's the one that I live on. So I am imagining the sunshine facing my eyes. And again, dropping that grounding cord to the center of the earth. And you can actually feel your pelvic floor, your pelvic bowl, just open at the bottom to this earth frequency that's super, super grounding. And if there's any energy that needs to be released and cleared, it can go through this passageway and will be held and transformed in Gaia, in the heart of Gaia. We are her children, and she is here to nourish and take care of us. So I'm going to bring my awareness back up to the root chakra, a beautiful ruby red chakra that's at the tailbone area, and just feeling that connect with Gaia, with the heart. Then coming up to the second chakra, Svadhisthana, which is orange gold, around the level of your uterus, around the level of your hips, and just feeling that energy, that light. Then coming up to the solar plexus in the yellow gold, and just taking a moment to breathe into that. So now we have our earth energy chakras in alignment with the earth. And the solar plexus, you can tweak if it's like a little too like tight or a little too wide. You can just bring it into the most comfortable setting that feels good for you. Then coming up to the heart chakra, like a million lotus flower petaled, gorgeous emerald green, remembering that it goes all the way around the back. All right. Beautiful integration space here between the earth and the cosmos. Coming up to the throat chakra in an aqua blue. Again, this one also goes around the back of the neck. Then up to the third eye in indigo. And then to the crown chakra, like a beautiful white lotus flower that is receiving energy from the divine, from the star layer, the Milky Way. And then we're going to go up out of Earth's atmosphere into the star layer. If there's a star that resonates with you, you can open to that energy frequency, or it could just be the universe in general, and allowing this beautiful iridescent light to come down back to that white lotus flower at the crown and just moving through the third eye. And as this energy moves through you, it's like a shower that can take away or carry away anything that you don't want to hold anymore. It goes through the third eye, the throat chakra, and the heart, into the solar plexus, Svadhisthana, the sacral chakra, and into the root, and carries on to the heart of Gaia, and just feeling that flow of energy through the system in a vertical way. And now coming back into the hip layer, like around the level of the hips, thinking of this as a medicine wheel. We have in the pubic bone is facing south, and feeling that promise of sunshine and summer if you're in the north hemisphere. And then to the right hip, which would be the region of the sun setting. The sacrum would be the north, and the ancestors. And the east is the dawn, the left hip. So now we've created a structure of alignment, like an internal altar scape that is both vertical and horizontal, like in a bowl. And I invite us to look within the pelvic bowl and at the very first layer, thinking about, you know, if this were water here, what would the water be like? Would it be turbulent at the top and very still at the bottom? Would it be mixing? Would it be any number of things? Just tune into the water. And again, remembering that connection to Gaia. And coming in deeper to the womb space and imagining that you are inside of a cave. And you have a fire that you've made, and there's the air quality is good. You're not trapped. You are in a divine space. As you are tending this fire, you can look up at the walls, and there are cave paintings all around you. And see if you can discern any of the pictures. These are all the stories. And almost as if you could like pick a star from the night sky, you're going to pick one of these pictures and hold it in your hands. And I think leading with gratitude that we have bodies, that we have, that we are alive, that we breathe, that we get to have these stories, that we're part of the story of consciousness. And then explore, what is this picture? And if you can't see it right now, that's okay. And you could decide what you want to do with the story. You could place it on the fire. You could place it in your heart. You could place it back on the wall. You could put it in like a little talisman and put it in your pocket to explore with later. What resonates with you? And again, sitting by the fire with your hands over your womb. Just feeling the sacredness of this place. I'm going to invite you to imagine that you have a wooden stick, a wand or something, and you're going to run it around the rim of your pelvic bowl, like it's a singing bowl, and just imagine that beautiful frequency And we're going to come back up into the wholeness of our bodies now. Back with our feet on the floor. Back with our structure of the chakras and the pelvic bowl. And now completing with a big blue bubble around us that's tucked in into the earth, just feeling yourself in a calm space close to the earth. And if you'd like to wiggle your feet and change your body posture, that is a complete guided visualization. And I invite you to journal with that picture, or that was from the cave, or see what that picture wants. What is the next step?
Thank you for that, Sarah. I really appreciate having that beautiful offering on this podcast. I think it's something that people could come back to also and, you know, review again. And yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, I'm one of the things I'd like to offer is to do that type of visualization work together live, maybe quarterly, maybe monthly, and then be able to share like what came up and do some collective healing work that way.
Mm. I really love that. Gosh, it's so good. I feel like this is the kind of stuff that, and I don't know, but I feel it in my being that this is the kind of stuff that like ancestrally we were connected to. We had experiences of gathering and of exploring these connections to awareness. And moving energy and releasing and visualizing, just like sensing into other layers. We've really all but lost at this point, at least culturally. Well, mainstream.
Yeah, in the mainstream, for sure. Yeah, I think humans have been doing this forever around the fire at night, mm-hmm. or in other various settings. I learned a lot of that from my teacher, Georgette Starr, who's got the Life Blessing Institute out in Oregon. So I just want to pay homage to her.
Yeah. Thank you for honoring your teacher too. I feel like that's another thing that, I mean, I really like to do, and I like to ask people to do as they come onto the podcast too, just like, okay, where is this from? You know, mm-hmm. But I think it is easy, especially in the world of social media and people kind of being these like social media experts, to not honor mm-hmm. the teachers.
Yeah, it reminds me of like being a mile wide and an inch thick versus a mile deep and an inch wide. You know, like where did this come from? Yeah, we're just handing it down from one generation to the next. We're obviously major disruption globally in that transmission, but it's surging up right now because we're at such a dire time collectively with how we've cared for our planet, and whether or not there's this great extinction, to what extent is it that's coming? I think all the spirits want us to go full on and see what can we really do here. We could be amazing and incredible and continue to sustain life here on this planet. What are we going to do?
Yeah, it may feel like we have no power because we're just one person or just a small group of people. But each of us has a part of the collective energy that's moving. And mm-hmm. it's just so easy. I think it's so easy, like even just bringing this up, it's like so easy to feel like helpless or hopeless when you mm-hmm. hear the numbers or you see just like what's happening. And yeah, just to have these reminders, like another reminder, here's another reminder. This is another way. This is another practice. Like there's so many things we could be, tiny little things. Take 15 minutes, and take an hour a week.
The more trauma that we're able to resolve, the better we can be present.
Yes.
To what is, and yes. present for each other.
So, so true. Okay. So thank you so much for all of this. Before we complete, I would love to just hear a little bit about your thoughts on perimenopause, because when we were preparing for this, you had a pretty interesting perspective. So mm-hmm. would you be open to sharing a little about
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've stepped into perimenopause this year with, you know, some exciting heat flushes, you know, having menses space out. And I think I had my first period of time with no periods. And for a hot minute, I was like, what if I never have one again? You know, as if it would happen that way. No, but you know, when you're used to having a period every month since you're 11 and I'm 49, it's a huge difference to not have that regular patterning of rhythm in my life, you know? So I've been thinking a lot about it because, of course, you know, like imagine if you were pregnant, but nobody told you you were pregnant, you would be like, what's going on with my body? Well, perimenopause is like that too. It's just that you're not growing a baby. You don't know how long it will last and all this kind of stuff. But so I've been diving into what's going on here and what do I want to do about it? And so first of all, when I have my menses, I really want to take advantage of releasing. And I think the same is true for releasing trauma, because the uterus will condense and become not as big because there won't be blood coming into it every month. And what I'm imagining is that it's going to condense and become like kind of like a piece of coal becomes a diamond, and just like this beautiful radiating light. And I want that radiance to be as much as possible. And so I don't want a lot of clutter in my uterus or a lot of trauma or whatever. So I've been focused on releasing trauma the past couple of years, and then also wanting to do different practices to clear my uterus as much as possible. It's sort of like imagining you have your apothecary and you were going to move out of it. Like, wouldn't you want to take everything with you and like clean it before you close the shop? That's how I feel. So the ovaries want to empty of the eggs because we don't want to get pregnant when we're 90. That's life threatening. All these eggs, all these creative ideas, all these things that I wanted to do when I was younger, I think it's like symbolically a time to look at which one of those, or are there a few of them that I really want to support and grow, and what of them can I let go? You know, because you're sort of thinking about like, how much energy do I have and what do I want to do with it for this next chapter of my life? It's twofold, right? We have the ovaries want to release eggs, and so you have this crazy hormone pattern because you're just popping eggs all the time, and they're not fully developed, so it's not the same as ovulation, but it's sort of like the grand finale of fireworks. So they're like half baked ideas, and that can lead to a lot of symptoms because, you know, the estrogen's high and the progesterone is super super low because you're not having a full ovulation process where you would end up with a corpus luteum, the little yellow body that makes progesterone. So you have this high estrogen, low progesterone that makes you feel kind of cookie. And then at the same time, the uterus would really like for you to pay attention to what energy needs to be birthed and released so that you will still have your categories of stories, but they don't have the same charge. They don't cause unconscious behaviors. That way you can become a better elder, more of a clear channel. Mm-hmm. That is what I'm excited about this process. And it's kind of a turbulent ride. And I'm grateful for the female form and all the ways that being embodied has made me a better spirit because of the feminine experience that I'm having of this body.
Wow. I love that so much. Yeah. I mean, you got to imagine that to get to a diamond, did you say from a piece of coal? Like to get to a diamond from a piece of coal, there's going to be some rough energy in there.
And where does coal come from? Our ancestors, like totally. The dinosaurs, the plants, you know, everything that was organic that was here for the past half a billion years becomes coal. Mm-hmm. And we're composting it into clarity.
There's so much wisdom in your words. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing today. And just like you gave like practical, like these are the ways that you can understand if you're holding any, you know, information or trauma in your womb space. And then this is the way that you practice is to therapeutically work with that, and then the visualization. And now I just feel like you've brought a lot today. So thank you so much. If folks are wanting, they want to learn more or work with you, what do you have coming up? Like, where can they find you?
Well, I want to say, Kyalea, thank you, first of all, for creating this platform and for providing such a sweet container to express these views. I think this kind of talk would definitely have been considered witchcraft. We'd be burned at the stake. So, you know, the visibility factor around this is intense because we survived by becoming invisible. So I just want to thank you for sprouting this beautiful tree so that we can have this conversation. And I have been, you know, working in the clinic for 17 or 18 years, one-to-one. I have done some teaching in the past, and I'm feeling like teaching is the next step for me. And I'm not exactly sure yet how that's going to look. I have learned so much amazing, miraculous things that would be like devastating to me if they weren't passed on to the next generation. So that's my legacy work, the egg that hasn't grown yet into a baby that I am currently gestating. And I don't know when I'm going to give birth and where exactly yet. So I do have an Instagram. That's my name, Sarah. I think it's Sarah E. Wiley ND, but even then, see, I can't even tell you that. I would love to be able to create a school that allows for innovation and creativity to be like paramount, that what I have learned from all my teachers is so valuable to me. And when I teach it to someone else, it's going to become something else. It's going to continue. It's a life force, these bodywork techniques. It's engagement with the spirit world. It's engagement with energy. And so it's going to move differently through me as through you. I want this school to train people to the highest ethical standards, but then also allow them to carry it forward. I'm hoping that there's this big wave coming of providers who want to have their clinic in every community, and that this is just a powerful way for healing of the feminine to occur, and the healing for the masculine as well. So that's my hope. And I feel like I'm riding a wave. It's coming. I appreciate this opportunity to focus with you and to share information. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And yeah, as it emerges, just send me whatever links that you have and I will put them on the show notes page. I feel very intrigued by what you're going to offer.
Yeah. Actually, we need body workers everywhere. There are enough uteruses for everyone.
So yeah, thank you so much for all the work that you're doing and for your vision and for sharing your wisdom.
And, you know, I want to share one other thing is that I got this book a long time ago and I don't even know where it went. So I bought it again. But it's Sacred Woman, and it's written by Queen Afua. I don't know if I'm saying it with the right intonation. There's so much in there about womb healing. It's like, as soon as I open it, I'm like, ah, I get almost like too excited to read it. I have to read it in small amounts, which is how I felt about Women Who Run With the Wolves with Clarissa Pinkola Estes. Mm-hmm. But there is a morning practice that she has mapped out, and it's powerful, and it's a book that's easily accessible. It's also on Audible. And the only thing she doesn't have in there is the abdominal massage. Mm. So I'm hoping that there'll be an integration there too. So I just wanted to share that because it's a way that anyone can start, you know, tomorrow with releasing trauma in a ritual form with oneself in the pre-dawn hours. It's very powerful stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm really impressed with the content on your podcast, and I'm honored to be included in that.
Woo woo! You made it to the end of the interview, beautiful friend. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for hanging out, for returning if you left in the midst of it to come back and hear the rest. I feel like there was so much in this interview, especially if you're a body worker. I feel like she really gave a good sense of how she works with our womb spaces, with clients, with patients in her case, to really support them in both becoming aware of and also releasing some of what's held in the womb space. Obviously, there's a lot more needed in order to actually practice the work, but I really felt like the visualizing and really getting a sense of how this work can be really bridging the worlds of actual body work, physical body work, and intuition was really neat. And then, wow, right? With the perimenopause piece, perimenopause to menopause, that concept of kind of polishing the coal into a diamond. I can't remember exactly the words that she used on that because it's been a while since I've listened to it, but just the concept that our womb spaces are going to condense. Like that's what happens, right? They do. They shrink. They become smaller as we head into menopause, but they're still there. And then it's like all the gems of our experience of our cycling years are condensed into this kind of concentrated power that can shine like a diamond, that can be really, we can imagine it as a diamond inside our pelvic bowl. I just really love that idea and that visual. And I hope that that is something that's inspiring for you too. So if you want any of the links to any of her work, I actually have updated links, not the ones that she mentioned on here, but updated links to her website. She's got a course out right now on loving your womb, and there's actually a discount code. So please do go to the show notes to find that, herbalwomb.com/episode119, herbalwomb.com/episode119, and you will get all of the information. Just scroll down and you'll find it there. And if you loved this episode, if there was something in it that was like a really big insight or something that really feels like it impacted you in some way, or you can think of someone who would really benefit from listening to this, then please share it. Share it with, if you're sharing it individually, you can share it with someone in a DM or a text message, or if you want to share it publicly with your community, you can do that in any way that you have access to, but certainly social media is an option. And if you do share on Instagram, please tag me at Herbal Womb Wisdom to show me that you are into this content. And then of course you can share it with your email list. You can just share it with friends, you know, however you would like to share it. That's a wonderful thing to do. Word of mouth is one of the best ways to honestly weave the web of our wombs together. Like Sarah said, and I thought that was kind of interesting at the end, this kind of work, I'm sure you know this, but this kind of work, this kind of knowledge, this kind of embodied healing practice, working with herbs, working with energy, really all the things that I talk about and that I bring guests on to talk about on this podcast, would have likely been considered witchcraft at some point in our collective history, and maybe still are. But honestly, it's all it's true medicine. It's like the ancestral wisdom that we have carried through our womb lineages. It is our relationship to the earth. It is our relationship to our bodies. It is our relationship to the seasons and cycles of the earth and our bodies, because we are in no separation. There is no separation. We are that. So just knowing that and feeling that, it's the kind of thing that is best shared word of mouth or person to person, heart to heart, womb to womb. I feel like that's where it gets impactful. That's where people really hear it. That's where people really feel the possibility there. I think sharing our womb stories themselves is so important. And this is one of the places, one of the ways that we can do that. So thank you for being here. Thanks for listening all the way to the end. Thank you for being a part of this community. I am so grateful for you. I am so grateful that we get to do this thing together. And I think that's enough. I think that's all for today. We've been on for quite some time. Thanks for going on the ride with me. Until next week, live well, connect deeply, and have a beautiful rest of your day.